of Field with Tim Bradstreet and Tom Racine.
Here we are again with another episode of Depth of Field. It's Tom Racine and Tim Bradstreet talking about pretty much whatever the hell they want to talk about. But tonight we have actually kind of a special little episode brought to us from the form. You've just been waiting for that. He's got this gigantic cigarette in his mouth. Like I'm sitting here complaining about the smoke, and he's got the biggest cigarette I've ever seen. Thank you.
It's a prop cigarette from Bear Country. I want to thank Jason, the prop master, for that. He made sure I got one of the giant cigarettes that I'm tossed out the
window. Well, we're going to have to ask about that in just a second. This is actually sort of a Casey Kasem special request sort of show from Jay Weber from the Depth of Field Podcast, a Go-Go board, has asked us to talk about Tom O'Brien. And if you don't know who Tom O'Brien is, well, gosh, you're going to know who Tom O'Brien is, because he is the model for the Punisher for the last, what, eight years? You've used this guy as your figure model, face model, for the Punisher. So
8 years this cat's been up in my grill.
It's literally. You've been looking at this guy's face for 8 years. I mean, in ways that most people never look at people's faces.
That's right, man. I've been an inch away.
You know him better than his wife or girlfriend. I don't even know if he's married or anything.
Hello.
So we're going to talk to Tom O'Brien a little later about what it's like to pose for Tim Bradstreet.
Some people will be very interested to find out, too, that, a lot of people know that I use models. It's not like I hide the fact. I never have. Mm-hmm.
Da Vinci used models. Come on.
I think it'd be cool for fans to know how much fun Tom has doing that. You know, I mean, at first he did it. He didn't know who the character was. And you'll find out some of this stuff. We're going to talk about this stuff when we talk to Tom. But he really did have a ball doing it.
And, it must have been, especially since he didn't know the character. I didn't even know that. And it must be. I'm anxious to ask him questions like that about, you know, what it was like to suddenly step into this thing where, here, wear a black trench coat and hold a gun. You know, I mean, sounds like a strange thing.
What was it like
thing?
Shooting people in the face from 3 inches away? It'll be fun stuff. He's waiting in the wings here, and we're going to get to him in just a few minutes. But first, we're going to just kind of delve into just a couple different things, right?
Yeah, we're going back and forth. We have some big things coming up in general. I mean, what's going on with you? I mean, you're zipping back and forth still to L.A. on Dark Country, are you?
Good Lord. I tell people I'm busy, and then they go, well, what are you working on? And I go, well, I've got two more Punisher covers to do. I've got three Scalped covers to do for Vertigo. I've got two Rogue Angel covers to do. I'm editing and art directing, co-editing and art directing a really, really, by the way, this is the first announcement for this, Raw Studios. Tom's kind of given me carte blanche.
Dun, dun, dun.
Said, hey, do you want to... I brought this project to him, and he's so busy doing Dark Country, he's just like, hey, well, you're a member of Raw, man. You be a part of it, and you know, we're going to have our name on it. And it's a co-branding thing we're doing with IDW for a friend of mine, a really wonderful writer who's done a lot of stuff with Don Coscarelli. Mm-hmm. He wrote On and Off. God, what's the name of that episode? It's the first episode of Masters of Horror, On and Off, a Country Road. Or he's going to slay me for not remembering what that is, but... So Don Coscarelli of Phantasm fame and Bubba Hotep. And So his name's Steven Romano, and he came to me about a year ago with this really cool idea for a project that he wanted me to contribute to, which was a book of 101 fake movie posters to movies you've never seen. And he created this whole, like, he created all these movie posters. Cool. And along with some other artists, mm-hmm. and wrote a basically fictional history of like say, for example, American International Pictures, Roger Corman, mm-hmm. or Hammer Studios, had, you know, done a bunch of movies we'd never heard of and had stars we'd never heard of. And so there's a whole history of this, like, kind
completely
of...
Completely made up.
Yeah, completely made up. And it's an absolute scream, and people will freak out when they see this book. It's just so cool. Huh. And Tom and I don't really have our distribution set up yet, totally. Mm-hmm. So we were like, hey, man, honestly, we'd love to do this book, mm-hmm. but... we're not totally in place to make it happen for where this book needs to get to. So I said, I said, go talk to Ted Adams at IDW and see what they think. And they loved it. Cool. And they were also very into, you know, working with Raw on it. So that was very cool. So doing that, also laying out my art book, doing graphic design and layout on my new 300-page magnum opus art book.
When is that coming out, by the way?
June, I believe.
Cool.
Yep, before the San Diego Comic Con, yeah. Wow. So I should have a bunch of bricks, lug around a bunch of bricks to the show to sell. Yeah. But yeah, so man, just busier than Get Out. Crazy busy.
So if people come to Comic-Con this year, they will actually be able to purchase this book from you?
Yeah, I hope so. I don't want to lug them all down to the show, but maybe I can get my publisher to ship me a ton down there.
That'd be kind of cool.
Then I wouldn't have to walk very far to get them.
Yeah. We have to actually. We'll have to have a special Comic-Con show at some point.
Well, we're limited to all the artists are limited to a half table this year.
Oh, really?
And they've shoved us back out into this no man's land.
That's
they're literally forcing the artists out of Comic-Con. This is not a new topic, by the way. I think people
who needs the artists? Come on, I mean Hollywood's here now.
People are talking about this all over the place, and you know the funny thing is about that is the Hollywood people come down to see the comic book artists.
Yeah. Exactly.
So they come down to promote their stuff, but they also come down to
so you're going to get half a table?
Yeah, we have to split tables with people.
Oh, man, because that was one of my favorite things. I mean, actually, you know, it's funny. As much of a fan as I am of film and of comic books, I'd very rarely gone to comic conventions, and I went to Comic-Con last year, and it was just that was part of my favorite part was visiting you there. But then you turn around, you see a guy who you have no idea who he is by looking at him, but all of a sudden you see him sitting there with his work, and you're like, "Oh my God, I collected that comic!"
Right,
you're
right,
like,
right.
"You did that one?
My
you did Daredevil in the 70s, you know?"
Oh and my God, you're John Foster,
exactly.
Holy
it's like, that was really cool, and then everybody
Gary
was
Gianni.
They're all approachable. I mean, they were the nicest guys. Everybody's shaking your hand. Oh yeah, it's great, you know, because they're just fans too. And then,
sure,
I mean, to think that you guys are getting smashed down the corner—that's ridiculous.
You won't find many prick prima donna guys out in Artist Alley.
No, because if they're there, they want to meet the fans.
Right,
I mean,
if you're
that kind of guy, you don't want to be there.
Exactly.
So if you're there, you want to meet the fans.
Exactly. One of the cool things in the last few years has been Brian Froud being at the show. Hmm. And for those of you who aren't familiar with Brian Froud, he's the guy who designed all the creatures and Muppets and stuff for Dark Crystal.
Hmm.
For hundreds of things.
Aren't they doing Dark Crystal 2 or something? I thought they were working on that.
They very well
studios.
Could be. You know,
I haven't heard much about it lately. But
the Froud Fairies, the Fairies book.
God,
I mean, the guy is just, he's a guy that you always felt was untouchable. I'll never meet that guy. You know, like that guy will never be somewhere I'm going to be at. No, he's there. He's at the show.
Cool.
Fantastic, you know.
Tell me a quick, we're riffing. Tell me a Comic-Con story that jumps out at you, an artist you met that you were just like, oh my God, that's that guy.
I don't know if I've talked about the Frank Frazetta thing on here before, have I?
No, I don't think so. I have to go change my underwear. I'm so excited to hear this, because I love Frank Frazetta.
I would have to say this is the best experience that I've had at Comic-Con. I mean, the neatest experience I've had at Comic-Con, but it's like maybe Mignolo, like running into Jack Kirby.
Yeah.
You know, I was talking to an editor at the Topps booth when Topps Comics was when they existed, and I was talking to this guy named Dwight Zimmerman, and he says, and I didn't really notice anything. I mean, I was just sitting there talking to him, and then all of a sudden, I just kind of, you know, peripherally noticed that I don't hear anything. You know, like the sound in the place changed.
Which is weird for Comic-Con.
And Dwight goes, I was sitting there yapping my gums, and Dwight kind of grabs my hand, so I'd look, and he goes, it's Frank Frazetta. And he whispered it to me. And I went, you know, mid-sentence, turned around, there's Frank Frazetta walking with Ellie, his wife, and some other guy, and I think Dennis Kitchen or somebody. And they're just walking, they're having a conversation, walking through the convention hall, and it's the strangest picture I've ever seen. It's like a scene out of a movie. There was a 15-foot radius of nobody around them. Okay, it was like, I'm not kidding either. This is not an exaggeration. There was a giant bubble around them.
Wow,
an invisible bubble where people weren't approaching him. They were people just kind of parting like the Red Sea. And I'm not kidding.
Wow, the second coming.
It was amazing. And Frank had just he'd had that pancreatic malady he was that really shut him down for 8-9 years.
Yeah.
You know, his eyes looked bulged, and he had showed the symptoms of this thing that ravaged him.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of shocking to see Frank look like that. But at the same time, it didn't. You know, you looked right past it. And on top of the cone. The parting of the Red Seas, the sound dropped out. Everyone stopped talking. Okay, so not only
I can hear the whispers. Frank Frazetta, Frank Frazetta, Frank Frazetta.
It was like the cone of silence was around them too.
Wow.
You know, so I mean that was bizarre, and it was also not that I got to talk to him. You know, I saw Frank Frazetta. You know, I like saw him.
He passed you.
He passed me. Yeah, I mean that's like one of those things. It's like going, hey, that oh my God, that was Cary Grant. Holy gads,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just amazing.
I saw Paul Newman one time in New York, and it was one of the few, because I'm not blasé about celebrities, but I'm especially living in New York, you're sort of like, you give them their respect. They're like, hey, you're Kevin Bacon, cool for you. But I went to a play, and I'm looking around, and all of a sudden the same kind of thing happens. Everybody's really quiet, and my wife and I are talking. We suddenly stop talking. I look down, and this guy walking down the hallway, down the aisle, is Paul Newman. And it's like,
wow.
Everybody's just like, and he was the nicest guy. He's talking to everybody, shaking hands, but it's just like, Paul Newman, man.
Yeah, I know. I remember my wife was like, went outside to have a cigarette while she was seeing this play up in Chicago at Steppenwolf called Buried Child. Mm-hmm. And it's written by Sam Shepard. Well, they were at opening night, and mm-hmm. Missy ducked out to have a cigarette in the alley, and this guy walks out, and he goes, hey, can I get a light? And it's Sam Shepard. And I think she's still caught in that alley, actually.
Exactly. Standing with a Zippo.
And Jessica Lange was with him, Lange, however you say her name.
Lange, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's just cool when you're like, it's so unexpected. You just kind of slap in the face, like, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know, pretty cool stuff.
Well, so in general, obviously, if you're listening to the show, there's a good chance you've been to a Comic Con, but you should come to San Diego because Lord knows not enough people do.
Yeah. Come to San Diego so you can sleep on someone's floor because there's no rooms available.
Exactly. Actually, last year was one of the first years I believe they actually sold out of passes. I think they're getting to the point now where they're starting to sell out of the weekend passes, so you might want to think about doing that. So.
Everybody was, ah!
Yeah.
I think people were actually killing people out on the street for scalp tickets.
They were. It was, people's organs were being taken and all sorts of stuff, so... But, so, yeah, no, Comic-Con is a great time. And actually, we were just talking that this year we'd like to maybe do a recording from there. Maybe we could do something live. That'd be kind of fun. I mean, if people are going to be there, you should write in on the raw boards if you've got plans to come to San Diego. And, you know, maybe we can organize something. It'd be kind of fun that people stop by and ask some real questions.
Stop there.
Just stop there. Okay. And we'll have an auditorium, and it'll be great. There'll be dancing girls, and it'll be terrific.
I hope you're ready to coordinate this. I'm so busy during the show.
I know. I'm just sitting there thinking, I'll just stop by with my computer, and there'll be, like, you know, 75 people going, hey, where's Tim Bradstreet, man?
Well, we'll definitely be able to do that. In fact, if there's maybe some creators that we love, people that we know that...
Oh, it'd be great. Yeah.
You know, like Brian Azzarello or somebody like that, you know, mm-hmm. people that you know I've been associated with that you think you'd be cool to hear from that person, Mike Carey.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Garth's going to be there this year. Who knows? I mean, I would, I can get Garth. So
yeah.
It'd be cool. Even if it's 10 minutes
at a time. Because last year I walked around, I had my this really cool little recording device on the bottom of an iPod. It was very cool, I must say. I don't even know who made it, but it really worked well. And I interviewed like 7 or 8 syndicated artists or guys who were selling their own work, and it was a really cool thing. So it'd be fun to do that this year. Maybe set up some of those interviews. I could just get 10 minutes with this guy and 10 minutes with that guy, and we could cobble it together as a Comic-Con special. So
yeah, that'd be great. I mean, I'd love to find not that we don't want to sit around and shoot the bull with Jimmy Palmiotti or something like that, but it'd be really cool to find people that we. I've saved that I don't normally see, mm-hmm. People that I look up to or that, be really great to get the opportunity,
Right, because a lot of those guys are there selling their wares, going through old stuff. It's great.
Palmiotti's always a great interview, so we should just do that anyway.
All right. So anyway, anything Dark Country-wise, I think we started there and we ended up on San Diego Comic-Con. I'm the single biggest San Diego Comic-Con promoter in the last of my 2 podcasts. I don't know, they need to start paying me. But anyway, Dark Country, what's going on? Any news?
No. When you get in post, there's a period of time where there's nothing to report because mm-hmm. everything's kind of being worked on. And
how about were you going to do movie posters for it?
Yeah, I've kind of started some preliminary stuff, pulling photos, kind of breaking out the old stuff that, I was so familiar with a few months ago and kind of, with that beat, since I last looked at it, kind of mm-hmm. looking at it with fresh eyes and starting to get into the mode. But as I said, I'm so busy, it's like trying to find, and I'm the worst multitasker on the planet. It's like I can only focus on one thing at a time.
He's actually inking Bad Planet with his left foot as we do this podcast.
That's
it's
right.
Amazing.
Christy Brown was my teacher. And no, actually, Christy, I think, had passed away by then. So, no, that's right. I was taking lessons from Daniel Day-Lewis.
That's right, himself. That's right.
Now, the truth is I couldn't afford Daniel Day-Lewis, and he didn't want anything to do with me. So remember the kid that played him? I found him. He's 33 right. years old now. He's a really cool guy.
Right. I found the guy who knows that kid, and he's the one who taught me. So, so anyway, but you are doing, you're working on some of the, you're going to be the official poster artist, or?
Yeah, unless I get to the point where I'm so crushed for time. I have to bow out.
Would you then hand your sketches over to somebody else?
I would probably try to art direct, unless they went, well, if Tim can't do it, let's just go to, some service bureau or, some third party.
Yeah.
I don't think Tom wants to do that. He's going to crack whip on me until I get a tattoo.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's going to be down here holding a gun to
Did
your
I
head,
say he's so. Going to crack wick on me?
You may have.
Hello.
We'll have to go back and check that out. We'll fix that in post.
I know you guys would pay to see pictures of that.
Yes, that would be
especially
fun.
If I was Mila Jovovich instead of Tim Bradstreet. Hello. What am I saying? It's just, we won't bring Patricia into this.
So what else?
She's so cool.
What else are you working on in general? The stuff you want to talk about before? Is anything coming down the pike that's kind of cool? Or?
Well, I'm working on... Did I blurb this last week about the Punisher teaser Warzone thing?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. I think we talked a little bit about that.
So since I've already blabbed it, that's what I'm working on right now.
Cool.
Warzone teaser poster.
And where are we in the Bad Planet pantheon of things?
That's on hold. You know, I'm waiting to get to issue 6. I just illustrated how busy I was with the umpteen things that, mm-hmm. that are going on.
Why are you even talking to me? Get to work.
And the one thing I neglected to mention was 22 pages of Bad Planet ink.
details.
So yeah, there's plenty more. But I hope to clear a little path here in the next week or two to get back to it.
Do you ever think about shipping that off to an inker or anything? Or you know,
I've thought about it. I mean, I warned Tom a long time ago. I said, dude, just the way this is getting done, it's gonna have to fit into holes and it's gonna be difficult. And
yeah.
He didn't care.
Because 4 is out in the stores now, right?
4 is out.
We need to update the website.
5 will be out here in a couple weeks.
I believe the website only has 3 on it, so we need to update the website to 4.
Yes, that's something that we definitely need to pay more attention to.
And 5 is coming out soon, so that's good. Things are still moving along.
Oddly enough, I don't hear too much about that on the forum. Like, hey, you guys need to update your main page.
I know. Come on, people, sit on them.
That would probably get us to do it. Yeah, exactly. As this interview with Tom O'Brien illustrates.
Yeah. Actually, it was one of those questions I want to ask Thomas Jane one of these days, because I was thinking about, Bad Planet would be, the other crusade I would love to get on is somebody needs to make another heavy metal type of movie using motion capture animation or something like that. There's got to be more adult animation, as much as I am a huge fan of Pixar and even Disney.
Go back to the rotoscope, man.
Exactly.
Just make something retro.
Yeah, it'd be cool. It'd be way cool. And Bad Planet is like, man, that's right up that alley. I mean, do you think there'd ever be... I mean, first of all, the problem is, I don't want to get too deeply into this, because obviously the problem is there's not much of a market for adult animation.
Right.
You spend $50 million and you get $1.50 back, so...
I think the way Tom is looking at it and has always looked at it is that it would be a live-action picture.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool.
And that the convict, who is anything but human, mm-hmm. would be a combination of... practical and CGI, meaning that we'd probably have a suit made, and there would be an actor that would exist in that suit. Ooh, Ron Perlman.
he's just like the go-to guy for anybody. You put a big chunk of makeup on somebody, it's got to be Ron Perlman.
Yeah, I would actually hate to put Ron in this thing.
Yeah.
But it'd almost be like wearing the suit from The Thing, you know?
Yeah.
You got to get somebody who's just passionate and really wants to do it and doesn't have an ego and doesn't have a career, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like doesn't
yeah.
like this is their shot,
right.
You know, to go through that.
Right.
So I remember
right.
Chiklis, and God knows, and I've said this before on the show, how much I despise the Fantastic Four movie. I know that Chiklis almost walked off the set the first day he was in that costume.
Oh, I heard,
like,
yeah.
What did I get myself into?
The claustrophobia of it. I couldn't do it.
He flipped out.
I don't think I could have the mask made where you just lay back and you get the plaster all over your head. A friend of mine did that. We were doing a thing. We were going to make a little Doctor Doom short, which never got off the ground, but he sat there for like 15
like
minutes.
So many other Doctor Doom
exactly.
projects.
I have to show you the script because it's damn funny, I must say. But yeah, just seeing him sit there for 15 minutes with his plaster on his face, I'm like, man, I don't think I could do that.
Yeah,
let alone be in the makeup.
You take a beating. I mean, and Perlman actually, you know, they put a lot of red makeup on his face, and they have appliances also for his head.
Mm-hmm.
But well, a lot of appliances on his face too. But some of him is there.
Yeah.
And
yeah, he can act through that, you know,
and
obviously.
Yeah, I mean, they did a great job with the makeup on that.
It is great.
Incredible.
It really is. They need to be recognized for that, because that is great makeup. It allows him to be Ron Perlman and still be Hellboy. It's very
right.
impressive.
Right. That classic Perlman deadpan.
Yeah.
You know,
you can see his eyes, you can see his mouth, everything. I mean, it's really good, and yet he's still Hellboy. It's very impressive.
Ron's the coolest guy, and if you ever meet him in person, he's he's a scream. I mean, he's one of the funniest guys you'll ever meet.
He was, yeah. It was great to interview him, which is actually going to be coming out pretty
he's
soon,
dark
by the
funny.
Way. We've been talking about the Ron Perlman interview. It's not very long, and you know, it's not like I'm going to break any new ground with it, but it was a great time to talk to him, and he's a really sweet guy, so that's going to be
fun. It
was,
and it's great because we're on set at Dark Country. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Ron had just shot, I mean, he was right in the middle of his last day.
Literally 3 a.m, it was freezing.
And I think it's a cool little thing that I didn't get to be a part of. But,
Your cell phone did, though, and it did amazingly well.
It did rather well.
It was actually more interesting than you most of the time. So, actually, I wanted to tell a little Hellboy story. I don't think I've mentioned this before. On my other podcast, we interviewed Patrick McDonald, who does Mutts,
to throw a cat in your lap.
he does the comic strip Mutts, which is hugely popular. He's in like over 1,000 papers, and the guy's an amazing, just really sweet, sweet guy. But every Sunday, the first panel is like a little homage. He did one to like Andy Warhol and all this kind of different stuff, and one of them was his main cat character as Hellboy. And he got to meet Mike Mignola, and they traded artwork because the Patrick McDonald's a huge fan.
Oh, that's cool.
And he got to meet, and so they exchanged artwork, so he's got an original thing, and then I just thought that was the coolest thing that this guy in the Sunday comics. So we talked a little bit about his love for comics, and it was really kind of cool. He was a big Hellboy fan.
Well, that's when you really know that you've become part of the pop culture iconography.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's like...
His little cat character looks like Hellboy now, just for this one panel. It's really funny.
Yeah, I mean, that's when the little things like that start coming out, or like you hear a song on the radio, and they say Hellboy in the song. I think Mike's definitely in that territory. He's got a thing that he created it is what it is, and it's great. I mean, I love it, but it's really Mike Mignola. It's that mind that
the mind of Mike Mignola.
Yeah, he's insane. You know that, right?
That's what I've heard.
He's crazy. But
I'll put you on the spot. Will you know anything about Hellboy 2? Have you heard anything?
We love the hell out of him.
Have you heard anything? I mean, Guillermo and all this? I mean,
yeah, not outside of what we talked about, I think, in past podcasts about how they shot the movie like scene for scene and that it was all edited.
Have you heard anything about test screenings or anything? I mean, is there...
Yeah,
because that's coming out this summer, so they've got to be pretty far along, if not... close to being done.
There's a test screen. There's going to be a screening in Los Angeles here coming up soon. It's done, actually.
Oh, really? Done?
I saw Perlman at Tom's birthday party 2 weeks ago, mm-hmm. and I don't know that I mentioned this, but Perlman had to he had to loop his dialogue a month ahead of schedule because they were ready for him. He thought he had another month. And
that's got to be rare in this day and age in Hollywood. So he made a lot of the executives very happy. We're ahead of schedule. Yay!
I'm not sure where they looped or did ADR, but I think they did it in London or something like that. And I think it...
Sound sounds better in London.
Ron right, so might be there right now. Yeah, they're doing it at Abbey Road. Yeah.
Cool.
But hopefully I didn't. That's not. I'm not retreading something. I don't go back and like listen to the episodes all the time. So I can memory.
So what do you do for a living? Are you coming to the party? Anyway, so we're gonna take a little break here, and when we get back, we're gonna give a call to Tom O'Brien, who is the face and the body behind the Punisher that you've seen for how many issues? 60 something issues that you guys did?
100
over 100 issues. Yeah. See, here I am downplaying 60% of what you've done. So we're going to talk to him about all sorts of stuff, about the fun of playing with guns and what it was like to...
56% of what it is. It's over 100.
Oh, it's over 100. Yeah. And what it was like to meet Tim Bradstreet and have this strange man walk up to you and say, I'd like to take pictures of you.
Yeah, most people would be like running in terror. Right. Which, remind me after we get off the phone with Tom to tell you a story about approaching a guy about modeling for me.
Wow, I can't wait to hear this. This is how he met his wife, by the way, too. So we'll be right back. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Depth of Field. I always wanted to say it that way. This is Tom Racine, and I'm with Tim Bradstreet. And we have a very special guest tonight, somebody whose name you might not know, but whose face you are well, well familiar with. Tell me all about him, Tim Bradstreet.
Well, Tom O'Brien is the guy, the face, the presence behind the Punisher on my covers. He's the model who's graced at least 100 covers, I want to say. Some of them don't have Tom on them. Occasionally, there's one that doesn't have Tom. So I'm going to say near 100 or around 100. So lots. 8 years of covers on the Punisher. He was, he's the guy that everybody recognizes, of this generation as the Punisher.
Excellent.
And pretty awesome.
So we are talking to Frank Castle himself. That's Tom right. O'Brien, welcome to the show.
Well, hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, this is actually really exciting because everyone who listens to this, all four of them, are big fans of Mr. Bradstreet's work. And so actually getting behind his process is always one of the most popular things we talk about. So you're obviously hugely behind his process. And I just want to start right off with, how did you guys meet? And basically, were you aware of the Punisher before getting into any of this?
Well, I had followed comics when I was a kid, and mostly I was a big Thor follower.
Good man, I like you already. Love Thor.
The Punisher had not actually graced me, so to say, And I knew who Tim was. We had come across each other through a mutual friend, actually. I was Tim, I don't know if you remember when we went to Ed's wedding.
Ed Pierce. Yeah, my brother Ed.
Yeah, I played for Ed's wedding, and I saw you and Missy there. And
I was having girl troubles then, that night. So, whoo, hey.
when you say played for, what was going on?
I was the DJ for his wedding. That's what I do for a living, among other things.
Jack of all trades, definitely. Well, yes, this man. He built his own house, for God's sake.
But that was where I first saw Tim. I think it was like the first time, and then I ended up working with his wife at this club where I was playing at, and
she was a stripper.
Yeah. And Tim came in and said, "There's my man. That's the guy I need." And they asked me about it, and I kind of had this, "What you want me to do? What?"
Yeah, he didn't really know what I was asking.
I'm not quite sure what to do. I understand that you're an artist, but I don't understand where I fit into all this. And
was it one of those, you know, I like you, but as a friend moments? You know, was it?
Yeah, I just didn't quite know where he was going with this. You know, I didn't, and so he explained it to me, and I said, "Sure, I'll give it a shot. Come on, you know, what the hell?"
Had you done any modeling before this?
Not really to speak of. No.
Most of my talent is the people that I get are friends, friends of friends, family, that kind of stuff. Not always people with experience, and you know, I don't care as long as they have, you know, as long as I know they'll photograph well.
Right, you're looking for the interesting face,
with reckless abandon sometimes. You know, Tom, I think too. You know, if you could have seen something, you know, if you could have saw a cover or something like that, and had that would have given you a quicker impression of what I was trying to describe to you.
Well, yeah, it was just something that, and the thing that really was funny to me was I had flashback to years ago. I was dating this girl, and somebody had asked her to do this modeling for this artist from somebody from Game Workshop.
This guy's trying to talk me out of my clothes. Who is this man?
And we went down, you know, we were both real leery on this. We went downtown Bloomington and blah, blah, and looked at this place, and it never did happen, but because we both thought, who was this? And
it at the Eddie Building?
It could have been, yeah.
Was it a guy named Steve Venters?
I don't remember the guy's name.
I used to have a studio there, and he used to bring models in. Yeah.
You know, he approached this girl on campus, saw her, and said,
"Steve Venters,
you'd be perfect for what I need." And
that's the oldest line in the book, man. Come up and see my etchings, for God's sake,
dude. That's totally Steve Venters. I know you're talking about him. He's the guy. What a small world. That's the guy who got me into being published. That was the guy who got me my first published work.
Cool. Well, it was just so strange because we went down and we looked through the window and this guy in this dilapidated building and this pile of bricks inside of there. And we're like, "What's this? This isn't a photo studio. What the heck is this?" And no, she never went and did it. And then of course I was approached by you, and
years
I'm like,
later.
"What? Yeah, all right. I'll come over and see what you're all about." Just because I'm always up for something new and interesting.
So Bradstreet, from your perspective, you walk in, you see this guy. What put me in terms of, you were going to work on the Punisher, you had already gotten the gig, and what did you see? You just saw this guy and you went, "Oh, there he is. There's the Punisher." What did you see?
Tom, did you come over before you came over like ready to get in costume? Or did you come straight away for a photo shoot fairly thing?
We came straight away for that photo shoot the first time. You're like, you know, come on by. If I recall properly, you come on by, bring a black shirt. And
Yep. I got everything else.
But when you saw him, what was it that said, "Ooh, the Punisher, there he is"? Why
oh, you
him?
Mean me?
Yeah, you. This is Bradstreet here. Right?
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Well, save that other story for later. when Jimmy Palmiotti offered me the Punisher, and it was Jimmy and Joe, but Jimmy was the guy who verbally face-to-faced me on it, the first person I thought of was Joel Stinton, who is my life, one of my lifelong best friends. And he'd done a ton of modeling for me before. He's the model for Red Sky Diary for Gallows. And so, you know, Joel was always my, you know, if I had a vigilante or a tough guy, I'd cast Joel in every time. And but Joel had moved to Montana, so he was a little far away. So
there, but for the grace of God, goes Frank Kessel.
And I remembered Missy told me that she was working with this guy over at Shooter's Lounge in Bloomington, Illinois, that looked like Joel. And she goes, "I think he might be really good for this," because I was what am I going to do? And Missy steps into the rescue like she always does.
That's what they're for.
And
amazing ones.
So I went in and I took one look at him and I went, oh, yeah, that's the guy, you know, in a heartbeat. And it's funny because I was telling Tom about this yesterday.
Thomas Jane, Thomas Stern, Thomas
I was telling O'Brien about this yesterday. I said, you know, Joel's like the not pretty version of Frank Castle. not to say that O'Brien's pretty, but he's like got leading man looks.
He's
you know?
Prettier.
Yeah, I mean, he's got great jawline, great bone structure. And I mean, you got to have some Native American in you, Tom.
It's the Italian.
Is it the Italian?
It's wow. The Italian, yeah.
You'd
never know. The O'Brien always throws everybody off.
Nothing says Italy like O'Brien.
Yeah, it's the half-Irish, half-Italian thing that gets me, you know.
So what was it like? I mean, the first time you go in, you do your photo shoot. What was it like?
So I come in and, you know, he brings in his weapons guy and starts bringing in all these guns. And I'm like, wow, look at all this stuff.
That had to be pretty surreal.
Oh, that's right. My friend Jeff brought weapons to that first shoot.
Man, I would have been a little creeped out here. Okay, what's going on?
You know? Yeah. And, well, we went down to my basement, right? So it's already kind of okay. We just walked past this gigantic heater.
The first question he asked you, have you seen Silence of the Lambs? No, good. Okay.
You ever seen
that? Yeah, I was, I'm coming in and I'm like, all right, what's he want me to do here? And, of course, then we suit up and he starts strapping all the gear on and what was the guy? Jeff, was that his name, if I recall?
Yeah, Jeff. Say that was, Jeff Carr.
Yeah, Jeff, and he starts running through all the weapons with me and starts running through the guns, so I know what I'm doing with them. And
that was the great thing about Jeff is he would not only come over with guns to help me out with my props, but he would also be like a coordinator. You know, he'd be like, you know, he'd had all the information, you know. You wouldn't hold your finger like this. You know, he was great.
Who was this guy? I'm
a
soldier.
He's
right.
Being somebody
that didn't play with a whole lot of guns, you know, I'm hanging on to him going, oh, this is cool. Look at this thing. I love this, you know. He's like, no, you don't hold it like that. This is the way you would hold that rifle. And I'm
that's
okay.
Cool. I'm sure that helped you out for verisimilitude in terms of, you know, the Punisher pretty much has to hold the gun the correct way. You know, you don't want some guy saying, why has he got it on his head, you know.
Well, there was some premeditation in that because, having come from Twilight 2000 and military games and stuff like doing illustration for that kind of stuff, I already had a pretty good knowledge. But I knew that I couldn't do a book like The Punisher and not have some smartness to, we had to know that people had to know we kind of looked, at least looked like we knew what we were doing, you know, like flipping a shot even. And then someone says, oh, the receiver's on the wrong side. He's obviously flipped a shot, you know. I mean, simple stuff like that to going, no, he'd never have that grain of a bullet, you know. People get really crazy about that
stuff.
Oh, I'm
sure,
yeah. And I know everyone's a stickler for that stuff, and especially a lot of the people that read The Punisher, because a lot of the audience that reads Punisher are military guys.
Hmm.
You know,
yeah,
guys,
so they're really going to
young guys.
They're going to rake you over the coals if you don't do it right. So.
That's right.
So what about, like, locations, things like that? Did you guys work on sets? Did you go on locations to help mood, or what was that all about?
Well, we first started out in Tim's studio at his place there.
In the basement.
And what was that, Tim?
In the basement.
In the basement. Yeah.
Nice brick walls. I was like, this is the perfect. It was. It's the best studio I ever had.
Yeah.
And I think it was, the location we shot, and we shot that motorcycle cover. Obviously, we couldn't get that bike down in the studio.
Right.
We had to shoot that one. Oh, that was a cold. That December we were outside,
oh, yeah.
That was a cold December we were shooting that.
I was home for Christmas, and before I went home back to California, Tom and I got together for a shoot. There was how much? 6 inches of snow on the ground, ice.
Oh, it was.
Yeah, it had to be easily 0 degrees out when we shot that.
It was
seriously
bitter. We'd shoot 5 or 6 shots and go back inside and warm up and come back out. And
I got a great cover out of that, too. I think it's Punisher number... Punisher Max, or no. Got to go back. It's Punisher. It's Marvel Knights Punisher.
Is that the one where you can see his nipples?
I think it's issue 2 or 3 of the Marvel Knights run, where he's on the motorcycle, and I did this warehouse thing behind him.
Where did you get the motorcycle? Just a friend's motorcycle?
It was Jeff's. It was my military advisor's Harley Davidson, is what it was. And it was a chopper, too. It was pretty cool.
Did you guys have, other stand-ins for villains, bad guys?
Sure.
What was it like to interact with those kind of guys there, Tom?
Remember strangling Arnold?
Yeah, we strangled Arnold, strangled your brother.
I remember one cover that they never let me do was Tom O'Brien as Frank Castle is forcing a man's head into a meat slicer.
Yeah, and that was
my friend Mark.
Gee, why didn't they let you do that? I'm not sure why.
And yeah, they said, well, you know, Marvel had all kinds of weird stuff when I was working on. As long as I've been working with them, they. One time, you know, Frank's standing behind a bar, and the idea is that, you know, instead of serving, you know, a drink, he's serving a Molotov cocktail. So, but then I got word from Marvel. He said, no, we can't have a Molotov cocktail. What?
Because of the
violence?
It's
a terrorist weapon.
And guns aren't?
That was the reason they said it was because it's a terrorist weapon.
Interesting.
And I thought, oh, okay, but you can't see the humor in that he's serving someone.
Cocktails?
Don't you get the... Yeah, so it was pretty ludicrous.
So what was it
when
like
we
to
were
work?
On locations, when we were on different locations that we'd do, because after we moved out of Tim's studio and he'd moved to San Diego, we'd come back and shoot at a building I had, which was a great backdrop for a lot of the stuff we were
awesome.
Shooting.
Cool. It's like an old, it's like
it's an old bank building.
National Bank of El Paso, right, Tom? Something like
right.
that?
So what was it like to work with the other extras? I mean, did you come up with ideas? Maybe I should be hitting them like this. Was it all Tim, like, just posing you like little dolls?
What about the building, man?
What about the building?
let's just finish up on that real quick.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize there were more about the building.
No. It was like dilapidated in spots, you know, and you know, plaster cracking off the walls. I mean, it was just such a great, you know, kind of gritty, urban-feeling setting.
Cool.
And
the building worked out real well for us in a lot of that.
It wasn't a bad shot in there.
No. But when we got to other villains, or when you're saying the other villains was fun, the locations would fall into some things just because there were so many people around. Like when we did the shot, did the shoot at Shooters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At the lounge, at the bar. You know, we waited until after the bar closed that night, and people should have left, and they didn't.
Yeah. No, they stuck around to see what all the hubbub was about.
Right. They all wanted to see Tim in action.
The generous managers, or I should say owners of the bar that they worked at, agreed to let me shoot in there, which was very nice of them.
What was the name of this place?
Shooter's Lounge, Ride the Nine.
So there's a plaque there for you guys?
Yeah.
The Punisher was shot here?
Well, wasn't one of the... Tom was no, that was a Hellblazer cover. One of the owners was that's a long story. Let's talk about Tom O'Brien tonight, Jack.
That's right. It's all about Tom O'Brien here. Did you have to prepare yourself physically for this part at all? I mean, did you feel the need to I better pump up a little bit here for being Frank Castle?
Well, I try to keep myself in relatively good shape, and I think that was one of the things that attracted Tim to me in the first place. But over the time, you know,
Spongy
when I know
muscles, that's right. I know the first time I met Tim Bradstreet, that's what attracted me to him, was the the physique.
Well, I would assume that was one of the things that he liked about me, you know, as
that
well
was a bonus,
like,
actually, because that was really, it was your face, you were face perfect for it, you know.
Yeah, you can always add muscles later.
Yeah, exactly. I can always throw a coat on you, right?
But did you feel yourself, you had to physically prepare for the part? I mean, did Tim call, say, I'm coming in a week or something like that, and you started pumping iron or anything? Or?
I'd be terrible, too. I'd call Tom at the drop of, hey, I'm coming home for Christmas.
We're shooting tomorrow.
Yeah, I'd try to hit it a little harder, make sure, we're going to be shooting next month, or we're going to be shooting 2 weeks.
Well, it'd be funny, too. Because
I better not be blowing off any workouts, you know.
O'Brien, I'd show up to a shoot, and O'Brien would be like, hey, I've been working out for you. Last couple weeks, I turned it up. I'd kind of fallen off the wagon, but I just want you to know I've been working out.
Wow, so you're like a fitness trainer, Tim Bradstreet's fitness program. There you go. Did you guys do any studio shoots? And I've got a thing here from Tim talking about photographer Scott Harbin, so I'll just throw that name out there and let you guys talk about it.
Let me run with this for a second, Tom, and then I definitely
sure,
want to hear,
go ahead.
This goes back to working with villains, too. Scott Harbin is a very good friend of mine that lives in Dallas, Texas, and he's a professional photographer. I mean, he's a real pro. He works for, you know, like Huey Bell and Dallas Mavericks, big-time companies, cars, I mean, you name it. He's like a commercial photographer, and he's awesome. He's got style, and that's why people go to him. He doesn't just do the, you know, regular role. We met through a mutual friend, Jim Daly. Ha! Uh-huh. There you go.
Penciler, Jim Daly.
Yeah, and we got to talking, and he offered me the use of his space if I ever wanted to do something down there, so I took him up on it. So, you know, I fortunately, we also had a friend in Dallas who runs conventions, and I think, didn't we kind of folded both things into one, didn't we, Tom? had you come down for the show and for the shoot? Or?
Yeah, we came down for the Comic-Con show in Dallas, and then as long as we were there, we took Harbin up on his studio offer. We got to give him kudos for that, and what a guy for offering that up to us.
Oh, and the props that Harbin has, too. You know, his neighbor is like he's a law enforcement guy. I don't want to tell you exactly what he does, but he's got way great weapons. And I mean, I'm talking like, oh
cool
my
stuff.
God, is it good stuff? You know, like from the riot shotguns to the automatic weapons. He's got FNFAL. Oh, it's just, dude's got everything.
And, oh, yeah. I mean, they were the weapons that Harbin brought in were very cool guns to play with.
And by the time we got to Harbin's we did two. Where we shot, you know, over 300, 400 pictures. Mm-hmm. And O'Brien, for this, I specifically wanted to get some better wardrobe, not work what we'd been. We'd shot in leather pants. We shot in jeans. We shot, you know, all kinds of different looks for Frank. But finally, mm-hmm. I kind of settled on this paramilitary thing. So he's wearing, like, black BDUs, the pants, and black jungle boots. Mm-hmm. And so those shoots, I think, produced a lot of really great images just because of the kind of switching gears of what you were wearing.
Yeah, the upper half kind of stayed the same for most of it.
Yeah, definitely.
And when we switched to, like you said, switch gears and got the different military gear on the lower end, it did a lot of things too. And like I said, the studio shoots that changed. And the other thing about the studio was there were obviously more people around.
Yeah.
Something when we were on location or when we were in the building, or in Tim's studio, it was pretty much Tim and I and a light guy.
Right.
You know.
So, Tim, when you set these things up, do you shoot a ton of different covers, or is this all one at a time, or do you just...
I try to shoot as many specific covers as I can, but that depends on how many scripts I have.
Yeah. I'm assuming you filled it up with, like, well, let's do this pose, too.
Sure.
This might come in handy.
The rest of it's all intuition and what I think might make a good image for a cover, cool. Knowing that I could plug them in into different environments and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And inevitably, you'll always come back. Doesn't matter how many pictures you shot, you know, I'll get this directive from the editor where he's like, we want on this cover, Garth wants to see, like, Frank, you know, standing at the... So I'm trying to think of the perfect pose of Frank, like, with his back to me. Now, I've already used back shots, Frank surrendering, Frank with his hands behind his head, just a cool back shot. But nothing that I could actually use for this because it calls for a different wardrobe, it calls for different...
Right.
So there's no matter how much you prepare or how much you try to intuit, there's always something that
is this worked in?
Extra
this is
challenging.
Here's a business question. Is this worked into the budget at all? They say, you know, we'll pay for him to fly down, we'll give you some wardrobe, this is part of your cover stuff?
They never gave us a dime. Marvel doesn't really do that. They don't really have budgets for... I mean, unless you're doing some huge, gigantic, silly, stupid project that you sold them on, like a movie,
right.
And they agree to pay some modeling fees, they don't... That's not their normal MO. That's...
So you said you guys met up in Dallas for also the Comic-Con. So, Tom, have you done a lot of Comic-Cons as Frank Castle? Do you...
Just the ones where Tim wants me to show up for, you know, where he says, come on down, these would be great, come on down, come on out for this one.
Well, he's met me up at the Chicago Comic Con, too, the Wizard World Chicago show.
Yeah, we did Chicago, we
have
did Dallas.
San Diego?
I wanted to do San Diego, and that just wasn't in my budget.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, I also want to interject, too, how many issues have we done? Tom O'Brien's never taken a dime for his work.
Really?
It's always, yeah, he's always just done it at first because I talked him into it, and right. Then beyond that...
it's a good way to meet chicks, though.
Yeah.
Hey, man, I'm the Punisher.
And beyond
yeah, but
that,
nobody believes you. Nobody believes... And you live where? El Paso? Yeah, right.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I mean, nobody believes. No,
no
look,
really,
look.
I'm the Punisher.
My models always take a lot of flack like that. Like, I had friends that were in New Orleans, and they saw the vampire shirts hanging in the store window, and they went in there, and they were looking at him, and the guy came over, can I help you? And they go, hey, this is us. And the guy's like...
Yeah, sure.
Okay, whatever, pal.
I was going to say, that kind of leads into this one. What was it like to see yourself on the cover of a comic book every month? Did you collect the comic and do you have them all with you? Or, you know, I mean, that's kind of cool, becoming a part of pop culture history.
Well, and it's a kind of funny story in itself, because, yeah, I did. The first one that came out, I was like, oh, look at that. That is great. That is so cool. And, yeah, I bought 10 copies of the first one. And I was like... gave them out to a bunch of my friends, and they all kind of looked at it and, you know, dropped it on their coffee table. Oh, that's kind of neat. And they just drop it on their coffee table like it was no big deal. Of course, they didn't know who it was, and meaning they didn't know the character. And,
right.
Didn't really, oh, that's kind of neat. And then the next issue came, and after I saw how my friends really didn't care, Hey, I got 10 issues of all of them.
That's right. Tom's got a huge collection of books. And Tom's like the guy, at least one of the guys, that doesn't have to wait, you know, like hey, Tim, can you sign this? He knows it's done.
It's already there.
Go ahead, Tim.
I'm sorry. No, go ahead.
Go ahead. Oh, it's my turn. I'm sorry. I'm just the moderator. Do you do any other modeling? Has this led you to do anything else? Is it something you've done more of?
Well, I'm working to get some more work out of it. I'm hoping that this will actually launch some more things.
I'd really like to find something else that I'm doing for Tom.
Well, you just sent me the Jonas Hex stuff.
Yeah, Jonas Hex, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. It's not, I mean, obviously the face is so disfigured and all that, but he's still the model for it.
Right.
I mean, that's pretty cool. Are you going to use him for anything else in the future? Or?
Well, it'd be great. It takes something like Jonas Hex to kind of, you know, like, normally I think if I don't have something that's just ideal like a Jonas Hex, just like where the character's so different, you know, and he could, you know, different props and different everything. It's probably better that you wait a while because he's so recognizable as the Punisher. But if I found the right thing where it was, I would want to do it in a second. And then the problem is that we're 2,000 miles away like we've been for, God, how many years? We started out in the same town.
Right.
During this 8 years of the Punisher. And 5 years ago, no, Jesus, 7 years ago.
I was going to say it was like shortly thereafter, yeah. And then we'd have to get together like once every 6 months, and you'd have to come back. And
so did you fly there basically?
Well, you know, I'd go home for Christmas, or I'd go home to see my parents, or I'd go home to do the Chicago show. Fly into Bloomington and then drive up to Chicago, whatever. But right. I would, you know, when you move from somewhere, you find yourself going back. So I took advantage of those,
right.
And then also like Tom had mentioned, took advantage of the shows in Dallas and that kind of thing too. I think all in all, Tom, we've probably done total 15 tops, maybe 20 shoots total.
It hasn't
been that many. We always shoot a ton of stuff.
The age of digital
that helped a lot too.
I want to say it really helped a lot, because we used to shoot a lot more stuff because we weren't sure how it came out. Once it went digital and we could see what you had to work with, right away, I think helped. Maybe I'm over talking you.
No. I think you're right. I think you're very right. I mean, you picked that up just in the shoots.
Yeah. You know, because we'd shoot something and you'd have that. I hope that looked better. I hope this.
Now you know right away.
Well, you know, you see the shot in the camera sometimes. You know, when the shutter goes, you can kind of get this real quick, just kind of synapse fire glimpse of what that shot was. Or you can just intuit, as I'll use that word again.
You just like that word.
That maybe there was too much light bouncing up on him, and the camera's not going to see it the way I do. And when you're shooting with a Pentax K1000 and developing your own film, you don't know the answer to that question for a while. Until you get to doing all that.
Yeah.
When it went to digital, you know, I knew what I had right away.
So
I knew whether it would work, knew when I could move on, didn't have to change film, blah, blah, blah.
And speaking of digital now, do you use Photoshop to cobble stuff together sometimes? I mean, do you take the head from this one, the body from that one? Or do you do a lot of that?
I do some Frankensteining for sure. I mean, I have to, because without Tom and I being closer together where we could do specific stuff, I have to figure out ways. I mean, I've shot body doubles and stuck his face on it, you know. Yeah. I've done all kinds of stuff like that.
Cool. So sometimes it's not him. Interesting. It's only half of him.
Well, yeah.
It's his left arm.
Sometimes it's not even him. I think there's an issue of the Punisher. There's two issues of the Punisher Max, where one is Jane's body and Tom O'Brien's face, and there's another one that's where the Punisher's got his back to you, and that's Tom Jane.
Man.
That's not even O'Brien.
Well, my goal in life is, if you ever need a bald guy with glasses, I want to be the guy.
Well, you know, there's also Scott Harvin's in a couple covers, his body. The one where he walks down the fire escape and there's this Russian kind of hitman sentry guy standing there with the hammer and sickle pink satin shirt. that's Harbin walking down behind him to kill him.
So Tom, I want to get back into the weapons, because that had to be a lot of fun to play with all the weapons. Did you have a particular favorite, or did you know anything that you really liked using or holding?
Well, yeah, they were all fun, but I was always having all of them on me, and Tim would be like, "I'll put that. We don't need that. That's too many guns on this one." He'd have to cut me back on some of them. I had fun with the twins, the Desert Eagles. Yeah. We had two of those, and that was always fun to work with on those.
I said, why don't you go over there and grab the twins, Tom?
Yeah.
I'd be like, my pleasure.
The AR-15, the M-16, whatever you want to call that, that one.
The M-16A1 with the grenade launcher underneath it?
With the grenade launcher on the bottom. That was a fun one.
Yeah.
I do like that gun.
Tom loves posing with the guns. Like, I'll be directing him, you know, and I'll go, okay, Tom, chin up a little bit. Okay, chin to the right, you know, follow my finger kind of thing, or follow my finger with your chin. Your nose, whatever. And, you know, I'd be making these little subtle adjustments. And we kind of get through with one setup, and Tom would stand up, you know, with the gun and go, how about this? And he'd, you know, he'd knock me out of pose, and I'd go, oh, no, that's not going to work, Tom.
At least take the picture.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I have plenty of those, believe me. You know, sometimes you have to play to, you know, shoot it because maybe it does work at some point, you know?
Yeah.
And like, this. Fire away.
Yeah,
we did a lot of them that were you'd start getting real comfortable with the guns.
Yeah.
What I want to know, Tom, is when you're I have a quick question specifically for you. I think our audience will find interesting. That is, what is it like to see yourself on a cover? Like, you know, we shoot these shots, okay? And I don't know if I've ever asked you this, but what do you think when you see it on the cover and you're like, I never expected it to look like that. Like, say, for example, we just shot some poses of you, you know, on your back shooting straight up like some guy was on a fire escape. And then all of a sudden you're firing up at a Russian Hind D helicopter. I mean, is that pretty cool to see that kind of...
Yeah, it is. It's like you do all the work. I mean, I'm there doing my share of it, but it's you're doing all that work, and you come in and you know what you're looking for, what you need. You're directing me to get there, and I must say, give you kudos on that. Great direction to get what you need out of me. And well, like you said, laying on your back shooting something, and when I see it in the cover form, or when I see it in the finished form, I'm like, I remember shooting that. Boy, that wasn't anything what we were doing. You know, that wasn't it. We were talking about something like that, but I couldn't see what he was thinking. He just had me all twisted out there doing something.
Remember that one we did on the chair where you had to lay on
your
hip?
Oh, yeah.
And that ended up being the Punisher breaking through plate glass with another one from the Mother Russia arc where he comes through this plate glass window that's got a hammer and sickle on it, right, firing both guns. You know, people had been at that point kind of, well, Tim Bradshaw, he's the same old thing every month. It's just the Punisher standing there with a gun and skull and never does any action covers. And so I threw that one out there to shut him the hell up.
Actually, I heard that actually helped bring down the Berlin Wall, that shot. So I'm very proud of you. So.
How dare you. How dare you,
I know
Mr.
that
Racine.
Working with him and on a podcast, he's a big jerk. What's he like in in photo shoots? What's it like working with him as an art director?
He just didn't he? He just kind of said,
no,
brilliant.
I want to get more brilliance out of him. Come on, I'm just.
He comes in, he knows what he's looking for.
Well, that's the biggest thing you want from an art director right there.
Yeah, you know, he knows what he's looking for. We'll shoot God knows how many shots until he feels that he's got what he came for. And then. Yeah. And then from there, like you said, then we'll shoot some miscellaneous things just in case he needs them for something else.
All I want to know
is... it's all very comfortable.
Well, that's good. I mean, you're running around with guns and leather on. I'm hoping it's pretty comfortable, at least at some point. So,
he has a ball role-playing, that character.
It must be great.
You can tell he's having fun when he's back there lit up, you know, doing his thing.
Have you done any acting at all, Tom? I mean, did this kind of make you think, wow, this is kind of cool stuff? I mean, did you get into the character in your own head? I mean, did you really treat it that seriously?
The first two issues that came out is when I really started to research the character more. The first issue came out, and I was like, wow, so this is what this character is. And then I really started to do the research on the character and get some background on him and try to figure out who he was.
This is the fascinating part about this relationship, actually, is because Tom became a huge Punisher fan during the course of this thing.
That's cool.
I mean,
absolutely.
I'd say even his email address, but I don't want to talk about it. I'm sorry, Tom. I was talking over you. Can you
repeat that?
You're
just talking
over people now. Yes, I've done a little acting here and there, and this is one of my favorite characters. I mean, I love what the character is. I think it's just one of the coolest guys. And yes, he's become a huge part of my life.
It's coming to a close now, at least in terms of the Tim Bradstreet run.
Yeah, this is the sad violin part of this.
Yeah, I mean, when he told you about that, how did that make you feel?
Well, you know, like all good things, they come to an end. You know, same as a wildwood weed. it had to happen. Maybe I shouldn't say had to happen.
It makes me
sad.
For me,
it makes me sad. But it's one of those things that, you know, you knew it wasn't going to last forever, but
that's the kind of thing we keep telling ourselves. You know, it's kind of like, you know, it's like, okay, this is going to end, and, you know, you remember how great it was, and you remember how great the fans are and all that, and then you go, God, I kind of almost wish I wasn't leaving the book.
Yeah.
But what it comes right down to is it needed to end at some point. And
you had a huge run. I mean, you're talking 7 or 8 years.
100-plus covers.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I just told my editor, when Garth leaves, I think I'll probably go with him, because right. I'd already kind of felt after 60 or 70 maybe that I was just kind of wanting to do something else and not have the pressure of this every month, you know. And but, you know, it gets real comfortable, too, after all those years.
Well, I know the two of you have made millions off of the merchandising for the Punisher, so
just loosen that piece. You know it.
Spent millions, maybe.
So that's actually a pretty good question. I mean, maybe it's a little controversial, but, I mean, you guys probably haven't seen a dime from any of the external merchandising. I know, obviously, you just told me that Tom hasn't. I mean, does that bother you at all, Tom, in terms of, like, I mean, here's the Punisher, it becomes a movie, it's another movie coming out. I mean, does this, you know, you're actually part of that phenomenon. Do you have any, I don't know, resentfulness about that? Or,
you know, I always have to tell myself that I started doing this for Tim. This was something that Tim asked me to do, and I didn't ask for anything from the beginning, and Tim and I have had a discussion about it numerous times, and he told me where he's standing on it, and so where his end of it goes. And I, like I said, I did this for him, and he's done a lot for me with it. And yeah, I would like to see more of it. You know,
wouldn't
like
it be nice
more.
To even get a third of a cent off every item with your face on it that gets sold?
Yeah.
You know, if I didn't have to pay for everything with my face on it, I'd be happy at this point.
Well, you know, that's part of the rub too. Tom brings up a good point. You know, we not only do we not see a dime for any of the merchandising with our work on it, but we don't. We don't even get comps. We don't even get complimentary.
You kidding me?
Yeah. Well, my house would actually kind of be filled with stuff right now.
Well, that's true. But even so, I mean, I would assume you'd get like 10 copies or 5 copies.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
I mean, I would like to have one copy of everything. It'd be great. And yeah. And I would love to be able to get even more than that for the people that work for me. You know,
exactly.
Like
you get 10, so you could send some out. I'm really stunned by that. I just would have assumed that was sort of, you know, part of the contract.
And to me, it was always a trade-off.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I guess we got to give out, I got to send out a big thanks to Sideshow Toy. I think it was Sideshow.
Sideshow.
That would probably be the only comp that I got out of them, was they did send me the statue.
And that's only because my good friends own and run that company.
That's right.
Right.
I've known these guys for a decade.
Yeah, they were supposed to send me a Thor statue, by the way, and they never did. So I met them at San Diego Comic-Con, and I was lied to. So.
I'll get that for you, actually.
Right. Tim pays me in bags of weed, so it's all right.
My friend Tom Gilliland, who started out as a figure model painter, is one of the owners there now. And he is one of my very best friends in the world. And I use him like a bat. No. Tom's modeled for me before. Tom was, it started out where he was a fan of my work before I met him. And we just hit it off like gangbusters. And, man, I mean, Tom and his crew were all involved in that Punisher extended cut animated Kuwait sequence that we created.
That's right.
They were all the soldiers.
Cool.
Those guys were just great friends, and they got a license from Marvel to do a, what do you think scale that thing is over there? It's not
quarter
one-sixth.
Scale.
Yeah.
I think that's quarter scale. It's big compared to everything else.
One-fourth, yeah.
It's a really great likeness of O'Brien.
That's pretty cool.
The figure is the best figure I own. I own a lot of stuff, and that's by far, I think, the best piece of work. You know, like, well, the Death Dealer is pretty good too.
That's cool, yeah.
But as far as figures, you know, this is one of the best, most realistic ones out there. And they even did a Tim Bradstreet skull edition. You know, like the skull that I did for the first 12-issue maxi series, Welcome Back, Frank. They put that on there, and they did a limited number of those.
So, Tom, you're immortalized. You're a statue. That's the coolest thing in the world.
I would never got copies on that if I didn't know Tom. Yeah. And then they made sure that I got a copy and that, you know, that Tom got a copy. So.
Right.
That's
got to be cool to look up in your mantelpiece and see yourself as the Punisher. I mean, that's just way cool.
It is. It's a very cool thing. And, yes, I'm immortalizing a statue, and it was... as far as the rest of the merchandising goes, you know, I look at it, I'm like, God, how do they get away with that?
There is a lot of crap.
How can they get away with that?
Some of the T-shirts are really great, though. They did some pretty cool T-shirts.
Yeah, and you don't see them either.
Ooh,
do you?
No.
That just seems so weird to me.
I probably could have seen something because my friend Bob Chapman, who owns Graffiti Designs, he used to have a license, mm-hmm. and he could have hooked me up. But I didn't ask him.
So, Tom, what's next for you? What are you doing? What fills your days now that Frank Castle is gone?
Yeah, because he filled so many days with him to start with.
Exactly. All year long, he just wait to do that.
It's now, you know, you're like everything else. You're like every other entertainer. You're looking for the next gig. You're just waiting to be cast as something else. I got the feelers out there looking to do things and... it's still spinning tunes as my form of living as I've done for the last 20 years.
I wasn't kidding either when I said he built his own houses. he built the house he lived in.
The Punisher can do whatever he wants, man.
Yeah. The you know, which is very strange as the entertainer that I am. Everybody's like, "Oh, you do construction and entertain it." No, I'm an entertainer and I do construction on the side.
Your construction. Dude, your career is almost so like Harrison Ford. You can go back to your carpentry, though. Your construction.
The construction is, like I say, it's the thing that you just keep doing when you're... But at night, you're still spinning, and weekends still spinning.
All I know is if somebody doesn't like your music, and you just say, "Hey, man, I'm the Punisher." Don't mess with me.
Wear your own T-shirt.
Yeah. No, I don't believe you. I don't believe you.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, even other friends of mine that go, "Oh, I know that guy." They're like, "Yeah, right."
Well, it's funny, too, because there's not a lot of covers where you can go, well, you know, if you know Tom O'Brien and you look at the covers, you go, "Yeah, that's Tom O'Brien." Mm-hmm. But if you don't know him, because of the way I light him so dark, I mean, he's in shadow. You know, I use a lot of shadow and stuff like that. I always tell people that if you met Tom face-to-face, you'd never believe he was the Punisher.
Yeah.
So this kind of makes sense a little bit. You know, and then, you know, I prepared people when you came to Dallas. I was like, "Guys, he's nothing like the character." So,
yeah.
You know, I'm like,
it'd be kind of hard
couldn't
to be
farther away from him, you know?
Yeah. I mean, could you really get, like, an ex-Navy SEAL to pose for you? I don't think so. I think it's my... you need somebody a little bit more light than that, too.
You talk about interacting with the villains, that the Dallas shot was one of the times we had most of the villains that were around.
Right, right. We had five or six guys hanging around, like doing.
Yeah, and that
stuff.
Those were great. Those were great shots. It was nice to, and this kind of falls back into what Tim was saying on from what I see shot, what we shoot to what I see on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there's a villain on the cover that, well, he wasn't there when we shot.
Right, right.
Also a lot of great shots we took that I was never able to use. And that's somewhat disappointing, too, because they're kind of maybe somewhat specific or, you know, I easily have 20 covers worth of stuff that I think is great that, you know, including the meat slicer one, that who knows if I'll ever get a chance to do them, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they might just sit around maybe in my spare time sometime, maybe my golden years, I might pull them out and just do some personal pieces with the character or whatever. But, hey, Tom, you remember that? We did one where Tom's hanging upside down. Total, professional, like when Jean Reno he drops upside down and he pulls the
shoot.
We did a really cool shoot like that to use somewhere, which would have made a great cover. You'd have to put the logo down at the bottom, or actually because it kind of covers, it almost looked like he'd be dropping out of the logo. There's a couple ways you could do it. He's got the laser sights on his guns that are coming. Yeah, it's just cool.
Well, I got two things to wrap this up, basically. And one was, have you ever really wanted to use one of these shots as like your Christmas card? Because that would be cool.
People have. People have. They paste their own faces on it.
I use the shots. I say I use them. I occasionally I'll put a picture here, put a picture there for something. I've got the prints that we had down at the Dallas show.
Those
I use those yeah, I use those for everything.
Cool.
That's a cool shot, man. I love that. That's a great still. I think that, I mean, not just because I shot it. No, it's like one of those ones I always wanted to use for a cover, but I decided not. I decided this one's out of the running because this is Tom's shot.
Right.
You know, that he can take and sell and autograph. And
cool.
And yeah, then, I use that one for a lot. We got them, you know, the dual shots. I should give a plug for those, right? You want a dual shot? I got some of those left.
Oh, yeah, we had, I went at one of these Dallas shows, I had Tom Jane down there, too. So we came in to shoot the Punisher, and I was going to do some Punisher stuff with Jane, too, but also some Cal McDonald stuff. And so we had both Toms in the studio, both Punishers. I brought a trench coat. Tom had his trench coat. We had different T-shirts. So we put Jane in the Punisher kind of as close as we could get to the movie. Yeah. And O'Brien in his regular getup, stood him back-to-back, did a little photo shoot with both Punishers. It's really cool. And while we were doing that, a friend of ours walked around with Tom's phone and 360 degrees, like did a little like short 12-second movie of it.
Matrix-like movie of it.
It was out on Tom's website for a while.
Cool. I was just saying that could be like the episode where Frank Castle gets cloned or something. You know, so
that would have been cool. Yeah. Or have Jane, you know, go back to the role of Nick Fury that I used to come up for Nick Fury.
And so my last question to wrap this up, I just want to say, is there any particular story or memory of the photo shoots that you want to share with our vast listening audience? Just because, I mean, it sounded like it was you guys were having a lot of fun. Is there anything that kind of jumps out at you?
Oh man!
Was there a time like Tom bending over? Sorry, Tom. I was just thinking.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I remember the time I tried to get into that position you wanted me in, and my pants ripped wide open. That's a fond memory.
Here's one I got to get in. This because Tim, I still can't get it for you. I know that one. It's that. This is one we tried in every shoot, and I know what you're. I know you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I totally do.
He always wanted me to get that Josie Wales look, you know, and I just couldn't give it to him the way he wanted it.
Yeah, it's like it's hard because I don't even know if Clint can do that necessarily, but the guy who painted that poster, you know, I don't know how close the photo reference was or not, but I think it was actually Clint did pose for it, but he's got two Navy Colts up, and it's the classic Josie Wales movie poster where, you know, he's got his mouth open, he's like he's going, and his eyes are squinted, and it's just awesome. And I always wanted to, you know, like every artist, you know, Truman's done it, you know, like there's probably a big handful of really famous guys that have done that Josie Wales poster.
Yeah.
But I wanted to do it because it's, you know, Josie Wales.
And you just couldn't. Every time we got together, we'd try it. Do you think I got it, Tim? I'm ready for it. I'm ready. Here we go.
We probably tried that. We probably tried it. Ten different photo shoots. We took a shot at it.
It's ripping his throat apart, you know.
It just wasn't me, you know. I'd be like, you know, you got the mouth that time, but the eyes are squinted. You got the mouth, but the forehead ain't right. You got the eyes that time, but you look like you're constipated.
The hardest part for the longest time was getting the mouth right, and then he says, "I got the mouth right, but I got the eyes wrong." Well, he's like looking at me like he just sat on a tack. I'm like, no. And we just couldn't get it, you know, for whatever reason. That was a shot that escaped us.
Yeah, you know, the Punisher doesn't look all that intimidating if he looks like he's going to the bathroom, really. So
no, but I must say the Dallas shoots were fun.
Yeah.
You ask if anything stuck out, and that was fun.
Kind of big production, right?
Yeah, I think a lot of that had to do with the... I didn't know I really had fans. I got to meet them there.
Yeah, cool. That was cool, yeah.
You know, in the studio that got to be my villains... we had fun with that shot with Adam and the tipping chair and all that.
Yeah, we had Adam Gilbert, who runs PunisherArt.com, and Adam Johnson, who runs ThePunisher.com, uber fans of The Punisher, and we wanted to put them on covers. And also a friend of ours, Mike. So that was a cool part of it too. Is I got to incorporate some of the fans and get them their a day in court on those covers too, occasionally. And it was a lot of fun because I'm like, hey, you know, like I could get anybody to pose for this stuff. Why not, you know, kill two birds with one stone?
Yeah, exactly. That's great. That was really that's I'd love to see those shots because that's really cool.
Yeah, that was like that show that Jane like that was a convergence of a lot of things going on.
Yeah, we did a lot of things that weekend. In the 4 or 5 days we were there, we covered a lot of ground, and that was really a great time. The other shoot, I mean, we had the shoots that we shot in December that were even in the building because there was no heat and they were just ice cold shoots. And then the ones that we did in the dead of summer in the building because there was no air and, you know, we were dressed in the trench and everything. We're just sweating our ass off. And, Yeah.
Ooh, that wasn't a good pairing. We're down, so what were you guys doing down in the basement?
Sweating your bill.
Well,
obviously you have put in your time for King and Country to bring the Punisher to life, and I will speak on behalf of fans everywhere and say thank you because, yeah, I mean, without it, it's just, obviously Tim was inspired by what he was seeing, and he wouldn't have done that without you. So that's really great. So I want to thank you for talking to us about all this.
Well, I thank you for having me.
And I hope you guys get to work again on something.
It'll happen.
The Jonah Hex stuff looks really promising, and I'm hoping that there's more stuff down the line for you so we can see you again.
Yeah, I would love to do some more stuff for Tim.
All right. So, Tom O'Brien, thank you very much for talking to us.
Thanks
you
a
bet.
Ton, Tom.
So we're back after the talking to the wonderful Tom O'Brien. That was great. Actually, it was really, really interesting because, I mean, you know, that's talk about a face behind the whole thing that, you know, doesn't get anywhere near the credit I'm sure he deserves. He doesn't get a dime for
no
it.
Credit, yeah.
Yeah, not a dime for it. But
outside of getting to see his cool mug on comic book covers every month for the last 8 years, I mean, that's really the only, you know, thing he gets. And he pays for his own copies.
I know, that's... You told me that. I'm just sitting there going, you're kidding me. You don't get like 10 copies out of this contract?
People are shocked when they hear stuff like that.
You got to start working on it. You got to get a better agent. Get that worked in your contract.
Well, people are shocked when they hear that we don't make any money or I don't make any money off of the merchandising.
Yeah.
And, I mentioned before when we were talking to Tom, I consider it a trade-off.
Yeah.
And the way that's a trade-off for me is, hey, we know how these things work, okay? Mm-hmm. It's not like I'm going to like make a demand to Marvel because...
Right.
They'll just go, well, you know, you're being a little bit unreasonable and we don't know. I mean, they could just as easily go find some guy that would really love to do it and doesn't care.
Yeah, that's the
They're
same.
Marvel.
Yeah, it's the same problem actors have. You can be replaced in 2 seconds. Thank
that's
you very
right.
much. So,
and I was enjoying what I was getting out of it, which was the fandom. I thought the fans are so incredible.
Yeah.
That my work is seen on a pretty widely seen book every month for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, I never would have met Tom Jane, you know, and maybe this movie never happened.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Everything builds on everything else. It's just, but 10 copies of the damn book. Give me a break. I mean,
I know
if you're listening to Marvel, come on, man, give your artist 5 copies of his own book.
I get three copies of my comic work. Jeez. There. 3 copies a month of my issue.
Cause like you talked about, I mean, you know, you'd want like 10, you could send one to Tom O'Brien and give him like 2 copies so he can have them.
Well,
first,
what would have been so hard about Marvel? Like, and I asked him about this way long time ago. Could they put Tom O'Brien on the comp list for Punisher and send him at least 2 or 3 copies every month?
Right.
No, never happened.
Well, we won't.
I'm not trying to rag on Marvel.
No, because it's probably industry-wide. I mean, it's not the kind of thing that you can
maybe
just...
Maybe I should be, but I'm not. Yeah. And I mean, a lot of people out there will be like, no, man, you should. No, but, you know, it is what it is. I knew what I was getting into. I'm no idiot there.
Yeah, It's not. But it just kind of surprises me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just, you always want a copy of your work, but... But anyway, so that was, I believe, before we went to talk to Tom O'Brien, you said something about a story you had about approaching somebody about taking pictures for them. Because that does have to be a little weird. I mean, everybody in the world's got that story of like,
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You know, the starlet in L.A. and somebody walks up and says, I'm going to make you a star. So tell me your story.
Well, I was downtown, like I was over in Hillcrest. That's where all the cool stuff is in this town. Well, a lot of it. And I was just hanging out down there, my wife and I, and she went into some store, and I walked over to a 7-Eleven to get a drink. Mm-hmm. And as I'm walking in, this guy pulls up, gets out of his car, and I'm like, and at the time, I had gotten a call from Axel Alonso, and he was offering me the Wolverine book.
Mm.
And I was like, man, I don't know if I can do that, because I don't know enough people out here yet, because I'd moved to San Diego, and I'd have to have the right model, blah, blah, blah. This guy walks out of this car, and I'm like, oh, my God, that guy, you know, I can draw the lamb chops on him. No big deal. This guy is Wolverine. I mean, this is as close as I'm going to get. And so I very nervously, I didn't want to follow him into the 7-Eleven. You know, I didn't want to stalk him. But in a sense,
there's a fine line of stalking here.
Well, it's kind
of
what I had to do anyway. I was smoking a cigarette, and I stood outside, and I waited for him to come out.
By the way, Hillcrest is the gay area of town, just so people know.
I know, and that actually never crossed my mind at the
time. It's like, smoking a cigarette, hey, man.
I that actually never crossed my mind at the time, and I don't know that it ever crossed my mind, period, until you just said that. That's a scream. Now there's a whole new connotation.
A whole new connotation here, yeah.
But at the time, so he comes out, and I say, excuse me, sir. And he kind of startled, looks around, looks at me, and just keeps walking. And I'm like, I'm, excuse me, sir, excuse me. I go, I'm an artist, and I'm trying to stutter around. I mean, I wasn't stuttering, I was nervous. I was just like trying to think of something to say to the guy to stop him. And I said, I'm an illustrator, and I think you'd be great for this book that I do. And I said, have you ever modeled before? That stopped him. He was on a beeline to his car, but that stopped him. I said, have you ever modeled before? He stops. And he's like, what are you talking about? I said, well, I do comic book covers. I do this and this and this, which probably fell on deaf ears. And I said, listen, I don't want to hassle you. I'm not trying to stalk you or anything like that. I said, honestly, I was just walking down the street. I saw you. You look like you could be this character. Here's my, I like got out a pen and I wrote down my web address for him. And I said, listen, I don't have any business cards or anything. I said, go look at my work. And if you're interested at all, just send me an email. And he kind of, he gave me this, he was like, yeah. He was like, hey, yeah. When he shook my hand and suddenly he was a different person after he realized that this wasn't a come on.
Or a pickup.
Yes.
Hey, sailor.
But he was so startled, when I first approached him. And I might as well have been a homeless guy. I'm not kidding.
I'm looking at Bradtree right now. Trust me. You'd think he was a homeless guy.
The minute I said, have you ever modeled before? I thought that was awesome.
So you need to carry like business cards and maybe even like a postcard of your work because, you could just say, here it is. But I mean, that is a good approach. Just basically let them take the ball and say, here's my website. I'm legitimate. But, come on, man, you got to start carrying around.
Something to show the people I like on an airplane.
Yeah, exactly. Because here's what I do. You probably see people like this all the time. You're like, hey, that guy'd be great for this. And,
it happens. Yeah. I mean, I totally look at faces everywhere I go. I go, ooh.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm always kind of, locked in there.
Yeah.
And sometimes I get looks staring at me for.
And you're right. And it's funny because I do that too. And you're not really looking at them.
Right.
You're looking at them as an artist.
I'm looking right through them.
Yeah.
Man.
You're just kind of like doing this thing with their art. And then you suddenly go, boy, that would look kind of creepy, wouldn't it? Yeah. So,
I know. It's always, kind of hard to think about it from the other side. Like, what? Oh, I just jumped out at them.
And Tim has the restraining orders to prove it. So.
Very true. Very true.
So thanks for listening. We had a great interview with Tom O'Brien, who we learned is the man behind the Punisher. Very cool, actually.
Doesn't live in Hillcrest.
Does not live in Hillcrest, and as far as we know, he's not gay. But no, that was a great interview, and hopefully, I sincerely say, I hope you get to work with him again because he, what a blast!
Yeah, I'd love to find some project that'd be right. If I ever had to do Solomon Kane, he's a little thick for Solomon Kane, but he's got the nose, he's got the jawline, he's got the kind of cold eyes. Ooh. I mean, I could shoot him in a different way, without the pools of shadow always under his eyes, but just kind of shoot. I mean, plus he wears that hat, and that garb.
Cool.
I'll call it garb because it's period.
It's just costuming. Fun to say the word garb.
Yeah. Well, I love the cloak too.
Yeah.
Do a lot of wind blowing stuff. I mean, it's a totally different animal. So it's like how I envision I could get by using the same model for something like that.
But it's just, you sound like he was having a great time and he's just such a nice guy. So
yeah, he's a good dude.
So we got a little into the mind of Tim Bradstreet and his process. Thanks for listening to Depth of Field. And we will be back real soon, hopefully with some very big Dark Country type of interview. We may actually finally get the holy grail of interviews. I won't promise anything because I don't know. I've said this for weeks and months and whatever, but I promise it is coming.
Yeah. Well, and we also have possibly a guest.
He's going to sneeze. Live radio, folks.
Good Lord. Well, that is well inexcusable.
Larry King would have been fired like 5 minutes ago if he'd done that.
Good Lord. Well, at least I turned away. But no. What I'm getting at is we might have a surprise guest.
That's right. Movie review, perhaps.
Yeah, might even be tonight.
Yeah.
Who knows?
We'll see if that works in.
Show up.
Keep listening because we're full of surprise.
Full of surprise, yeah. Be prepared for that.
The Last Starfighter.
The Last Starfighter.
Sadly, one of my favorite guilty pleasure movies, I must say.
I'm going to say Lance Guest.
Lance Guest. What year?
Oh, jeez. I saw this at the theater. 84.
Bingo.
Oh, yeah.
The year we graduated high school. At least I did. Did you graduate high school? What's your opinion?
It's not even worth it.
I had a crush on the girl.
Yeah, the girl with three names.
Yes, yeah, one of the many three-named actresses.
Mary, she's in.
There's a Mary there.
She's in Night of the Comet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, damn it, why can't I access her name? Mary. It's not Mary Stuart Masterson.
It's close.
It's not Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio.
No. Who I love. Oh, God, I want her.
It's, I know it.
It's actually Catherine Mary Stewart.
Catherine Mary Stewart, yes.
So you can combine them into one actress, Catherine Mary Stewart Masterson.
Catherine Mary Stewart Picard.
She's still working, too. She did something in 2008. I loved her. I thought she was great in that film. I had such a good time.
I'm going to say... Who else we have? The immortal, the incredible Robert Preston.
It just... Him and the other guy we're going to mention once you get to him just lifted that film to like, it's like, wow, that's so cool out there. I mean, he was basically playing, you know, Harold Hill from The Music Man, but it was perfect.
He was great.
It was The Music Man in space.
I just love his voice. You know, it's like I was just watching Junior Bonner the other night, mm-hmm. him as Ace Bonner, as Steve McQueen's dad. Just the whole dynamic of that film, that Peckinpah masterpiece, you know.
Preston, I think Robert Preston is a vastly underrated actor. I think he was amazing at what he did.
Well, didn't he win the Academy Award or get nominated for The Music Man?
I think so, yeah. Okay. But he's one of those guys that just doesn't ever seem to come up in conversation when people talk about older actors. I mean, everybody knows, like, oh yeah, Robert
Preston.
Probably
got nominated for Victor Victoria, too, right?
Yeah, but he is so good. All right, who else you got?
I'm going to say Gavin O'Hurley. Or is it Dan O'Hurley?
Dan O'Hurley. Okay.
I always get him confused because one's the father, one's the son.
He was actually, interestingly enough, Robert Preston was nominated for Victor Victoria, but that was it.
But not Music Man.
Not Music Man.
Wow.
That's a crime.
That's stunning. Yeah, there must have been some stiff competition that year.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dan O'Hurley, love that guy. Oh, he's so great.
Still one of my favorite lines where Lance Guest turns around and says, it'll be a slaughter. And he goes, that's the spirit. And I just love the way he does
in a very non-Roy Batty kind of way.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, and I know who the actress who plays Catherine Mary Stewart's like mother or grandmother, whoever the heck she lives with.
Oh, the older lady.
Yeah, they live in that trailer park full of older people.
Yeah.
And I can't. I'm just going to lose my mind and let those character actors are slipping from my imagination. But I know there's at least a few more names of people that I absolutely know who they are. I just can't remember.
That lady, Granny Gordon, is played by Meg Wiley.
Well, Meg Wiley. I don't know if I'd have got that, actually.
Yeah,
but there's another neighbor there that I think I would have got.
I want to know the guy who played Zur, Norman Snow.
Norman Snow, the acting like he's this great actor. I have no idea who that guy is.
I honestly, you know, this is just me being a stupid geek because I love this film because it came out at exactly the right time for me to think that I could play a video game and then go to space. But I thought this would be a movie to like totally revisit and darken up a little bit, like pick it up 20 years later. They've got kids, they're in space, but like the whole thing is falling apart or something. I mean, I really honestly think that there's...
might be fun. I think Catherine Mary Stewart is still pretty hot, too.
Yeah, exactly. And I think because they're kids now, it would be like 16.
I know Lance Guest is looking for work.
He must be, probably, more than likely. So, I mean, I was like,
maybe Gavin O'Hurley, he could play Dan O'Hurley's part or play, you know, like his heir, you know, maybe his son. Who knows?
Of course. Jesus. Okay, I just said this, and I swear to God I didn't know this. I just clicked on the director. Do you happen to know his name? That'd be tough. He directed The Boy Who Could Fly. He directed
That's a great
Mr. Wrong.
By the way, Boy Who Could Fly, great movie. Whatever happened to Jay Underwood? Well, he's doing a lot of commercials now.
Yeah.
He's done a crud load of commercials, but he's really wonderful in that film.
This is directed by a gentleman by the name of Nick Castle.
Nick Castle, yeah, I know the name, but I'm not...
But guess what? The year 2010, it's announced Starfighter.
He is doing a sequel. So is he directing it?
That's what it says, director. So it looks like it's going to be...
If you're going to do a remake, do your own.
Do your own.
Hitchcock
right.
did it. You know, that's, yeah, but, I like I mean, that.
But really grit it up, man. So, anyway.
Grit it up for today's audience.
The Last Starfighter.
Just don't dumb it down.
Hollywood never does that.
Yeah, that would be a shock.